died in the dungeon would be recycled and disappear, but such things didn't happen once their connection to the dungeon was severed. So the mimic went in, found one of its kind, wrapped its tongue tentacles around it, and dragged it outside by force. The lower-leveled monster struggled, but was unable to resist its much stronger, more powerful kin. Once it was forced outside the dungeon, it was murdered by a single use of the Ebonfire spell. The weaker mimic's corpse was then put into its killer's storage. And now that the time was right, it was taken back out. Zira and her master then decorated the corpse by burning it and stabbing it in several places and throwing some weapons around it to make it look like it had dropped them. All that was left was to wait for everyone to gather and feed them the story. And they bought it. They were even going to pay Zira for basically betraying and murdering her teammates. All things considered, this plot of hers was a resounding success. So then, why was the mimic pissed off at its familiar to the point where it found it necessary to shred her face on the coarse ground? Because the Inferno spell that Zira used as a distraction very nearly set fire to the tree it was hiding in. That pyromaniac side of hers wasn't part of her act. That was just how she always was. The succubus, it would seem, was one of those people who just wanted to watch the world burn. As for the mimic, it was left feeling a little hungry after that exercise and had to give up on all those tasty corpses. Since its tongue was already wrapped around something delectable, it absent-mindedly ate its familiar for the 35th time. It chewed on her slowly, ignoring her moans and wails. At some point, the delectable succubus flesh suddenly vanished from its tongue. "Your familiar has been banished." It then immediately remembered that doing that would not actually sate its hunger. Oh well. It shrugged its non-existent shoulders and took out a dead deer from its storage to snack on. General information. You may skip to the next part. Mimic. Lesser. Plus. Genderless. 3 months old. Level 25 Mimic. Level 13 Warlock. 598 out of 598 HP. Plus 1.4 per second. 465 out of 500 MP. Plus 0.7 per second. Attributes. Strength, 78. Dexterity, 79. Agility, 70. Endurance, 104. Intelligence, 100. Wisdom, 64. Luck, 30. Mental Fortitude, 55. Mimic Skills. Assassination, level 5. Storage, level 4. Cadaver Absorption, level 4. Biomass, level 2. Warlock Skills. Summon Familiar, level 2. Power Overwhelming, level 1. Other Skills. Shapeshift, level 5. Stealth, level 4. Sword Mastery, level 5. Projectile Mastery, level 2. Ruin Mastery, level 4. Domination Mastery, level 3. Spell List. Ruin. Shadow Bolt. Ebonfire. Frostbite. Dark Explosion. Domination. Mass Panic. Delirium. Part 6. Having eaten its fill with animal carcasses from its storage, the mimic once again called forth its familiar. It let out a gurgle of,
"Sunnen, familiar!"
Several rings made out of purple light sprang forth from the chest. Upon closer inspection, the rings weren't solid, but actually made out of countless tiny runic symbols. The unletters kept shifting, changing, and orbiting around the mimic. The circles slowly shrank, converging on a single point just half a meter in front of the mimic. Over the 10-second duration of the skill, they tightened up into a small ball of light, and on the 10-second mark, it exploded into light with a soft pang. Proficiency level increased. Summon Familiar is now level 3. Intelligence plus 2. Wisdom plus 1. Mental Fortitude plus 1. In its place was Zira in her true form. Her shape was predominantly humanoid and about 170 centimeters tall. However, nobody would ever mistake her for a human. Her smooth skin was a light blue color, while her waist-long, straight hair was a deep blue like a piece of the night sky. Her eyes glowed with a bright red light that gave off the feeling she was staring into one's very soul. She had a fittingly gorgeous face with azure lips so soft and plump that it felt like a crime not to taste them. The outfit she was wearing? if you can even call it that, was made out of blood-red leather. Her long legs were covered in high-heeled boots that went up to her smooth thighs. A triangular bikini-like garment hid her sensitive bits. Her arms had long, detached sleeves that ran from her bicep all the way down to her wrist. Each one was attached to a silver ring on the succubus's middle finger, covering the backside of her hands and leaving her palms and fingers uncovered. A choker encrusted with a single, sparkling gem was fitted around her neck. Her formidable breasts, each almost the size of her head, were held up by a risque, corset-like chest piece. It ran around her back and covered the front and underside of each boob with a triangular strip of leather. It wasn't even properly connected at the front, leaving the valley of her cleavage completely exposed. The half-corset was clearly designed to push up and accentuate her already impressive cup size rather than serve any practical purpose. Altogether, her wide hips, dangerously narrow waist, and eye-catching mammaries gave her an undeniable hourglass-like figure. The gap between her thighs was wide enough to make her walk a natural hip-swaying gait that caused her plump rump and marshmallow-like boob flesh to jiggle enticingly with every step. It was a body that truly had only one purpose: to inflame the lusts of men. Even her demonic features looked beautiful and alluring next to the spectacle that was her slutty body. The two curved, golden, ram-like horns that jutted out from the sides of her head clearly declared her identity as a demon. Then there was the long, black, spade-tipped tail that grew out of her lower spine. Most impressive of all were the two bat-like wings attached to her upper back. They were a mix of deep red limbs and sky-blue membranes. They gave her a wingspan of over 2 meters, which was more than enough to allow her to fly. Floating unnaturally next to the demonic seductress was her staff, a long wooden shaft tipped with a half-circle staff head reminiscent of a hook. A purple crystal ball floated inside it, as if attached by invisible strings. Both this staff and the outfit she was wearing were essentially an extension of her spirit. It wouldn't be entirely wrong to call them a part of her conjured body, though they served no purpose beyond decoration. The staff in particular was so frail that even a toddler would be able to snap it in half. Having been materialized in the waking world for the umpteenth time, Zira immediately crossed her arms and pouted at her summoner.
"Geez, Master. You know you didn't have to actually go that far."
The demoness protested to being devoured alive. It was a fact that, regardless of its methods or intentions, this chest had opened up a whole new world of pleasure for her. But she still refused to openly admit that she actually longed to be abused and hurt. The shattered remnants of her pride would not allow her to concede so easily. She would be a failure of a demon if some mortal had managed to dominate both her body and soul to such an extent.
"I know I messed up, but surely that punishment was a bit much."
She let out an unintentional moan when she recalled what had happened minutes ago. No matter how much her fractured pride tried to deny it, deep down, she wanted more. Her master was currently ignoring her with a cold attitude that seemed to somehow egg her on. Again, this wasn't on purpose. The mimic was simply busy. It was reviewing the status screen of its bonded familiar. General information. Zirababa Dabuth Lokrelela. Succubus, Cerulean. Female. 748 years old. Level 11, Succubus. Level 7, Pyromancer. 243 out of 243 HP, plus 0.4 per second. 255 out of 395 MP, plus 0.3 per second. Attributes: Strength, 13. Dexterity, 13. Agility, 13. Endurance, 46. Intelligence, 79. Wisdom, 39. Mental Fortitude, 55. Charisma, 59. Succubus skills: Energy Drain, Level 4. Demonic Seduction, Level 3. Pyromancer skills: Devouring Flame, Level 3. Other skills: Shapeshift, Level 2. Dreamweaver, Level 2. Domination Mastery, Level 3. Pyroclasm Mastery, Level 3. Raising the level of Summon Familiar from 2 to 3 did indeed increase her abilities across the board. Unlike beings born in the physical world, a demon's strength relied entirely on how much MP was spent to summon it to this realm. For example, no matter how many times she killed things with pyroclasm spells, the related mastery skill would never raise. Likewise, her job levels would never progress on their own. A familiar's body was, essentially, the manifestation of the warlock's summon familiar skill. Demons didn't actually have bodies in the beyond. They were simply lent one by their summoner. So, ultimately, their actions in this world helped raise their master's warlock job and summon familiar skill. As the master's skill and MP went up, so would the strength of the familiar. Frankly speaking, a situation where a level 13 warlock summoned a level 18 familiar was unthinkable. They just wouldn't be able to have that much MP. However, considering her master had a total level of 38, her being 20 levels below was pitiful. Still, it was enough to take down that dwarven priest in less than a few seconds, despite the level gap.
Hey! Are you even listening to me?
Cleh?
Grunted the mimic. It wasn't actually listening, no. It wondered what the hell this infernal woman wanted now.
I still need to go get the gold, right?
Ah!
It suddenly remembered she still had to collect her reward for a job well done. It quickly gave her permission to do that through the thought link. Zira sighed and began morphing her appearance. Much like her master, she could not assume a form that was hugely different from her own. But she could still adjust things like her proportions or the colors of her skin, eyes, and hair. Even her fetishistic leather outfit started expanding and wiggling across her body as it took on the appearance of a blue robe. About 3 minutes later, Zira the Succubus was replaced by Zira the Witch.
I shall be off, Master. And please do not eat any more trees. We're supposed to be lying low, and I'd hate to see you discovered.
The succubus realized exactly what she had said and frantically tried to correct herself.
Don't misunderstand. It's not like I care whether you kick the bucket or not, okay? I just don't want to see a successful conspiracy turn to nothing because of your careless actions.
The mimic questioned her about what buckets had to do with anything.
Well, it's... Never mind.
Zira dejectedly dropped her shoulders. She knew better than to try to explain things to that monster. Just making it properly grasp the whole plan took almost an entire day.
Really?
She thought.
How come I had to be saddled with an incompetent master like that? Well, at least he lets me run around and do as I please while I'm in town, so I can't complain too much.
Having cheered herself up a bit, Zira once again said goodbye to her master and went off in the direction of the city. Left to its own devices, the mimic mulled over what it should do next. It had gained 2 whole warlock levels when Zira killed that priest and about 1.5 mimic levels from murdering the other 3. It was a huge gain considering how little time the actual fighting took. The only other time it noticed a significant bump in its job levels was when it ended up intruding on another Janther's territory. This one was a bit weaker, so it was able to kill it with repeated applications of mass panic to disrupt its attacks. The beast seemed to build up some resistance to the magically induced fear, but by that point it was already bleeding heavily. And of course, cadaver absorption failed to gain anything useful. The mimic was realizing exactly how lucky it had gotten with the warlock job. It must have consumed over 50 corpses so far, but it only got 3 minor successes for a total of 6 strength. Well, it did also get a moderate success out of a goblin and absorbed a bit of sword mastery proficiency, but the actual gain turned out to be only 3%. It seemed that skills were really hard to raise beyond level 5. Still, it had a lot to look forward to in that regard. Its busy days in the forest had allowed it to unlock 2 new restricted skills. Biomass. The shapeshifter's intimate knowledge of its own body has allowed it to stockpile additional mass without affecting its mobility or appearance while improving its own regeneration. Requirements: level 20 monster job, level 3 shapeshift, strength 50, endurance 50. Type: passive. Range: self. Effects: increases body mass by 20% per level of this skill. Increases automatic HP recovery by 10% per level of this skill. This one was particularly useful. The additional mass was necessary raw material when performing large-scale shapeshifting. For example, it could now manifest 8 spider legs instead of 6, allowing a greater degree of control over its movements and a noticeable increase in speed. Its tongues could also stretch out farther and strike with a bit of extra force. The downside was that lugging that extra mass around consumed more energy and made the mimic hungrier as a whole. That wasn't a problem, though. This forest was basically an all-you-can-eat buffet for this particular chest. not to mention that eating a whole lot at once was the main way of raising this skill's levels. Next was the warlock skill the mimic had unlocked earlier today. Power overwhelming. The warlock becomes a bastion of arcane might. Requirements. Level 10 warlock. Ruin mastery. Intelligence 60. Type, active. Activation time, instant. Cost, 20 MP. Range, self. Effects. Ruin spells will cost 400% more MP. Ruin spells will be 200% more effective. The ruin spell effectiveness multiplier will increase by an additional 20% per level of the skill. The effects of the skill will last 20 seconds. Most caster jobs treated MP as a valuable resource that had to be used sparingly. Their magic was not unlike a candle that burned slowly and steadily. But warlocks were different. Their magic was like a rocket. Brief, but blindingly brilliant. It was well suited to the mimic's ambush-focused hunting patterns. Being able to settle fights in the first hit was the essence of assassination. However, there was a problem. The skill was literally blindingly brilliant. Activating it surrounded the mimic with an aura of arcane energies that crackled around it like lightning. It was so flashy and noisy that it easily overwhelmed the effects of stealth. There was no way it could successfully trigger assassination under such conditions. Ultimately, it was a skill meant for finishing a fight rather than starting it, but the mimic failed to realize that when it picked it. Still, what was done was done. Besides, it looked like it would be good to use this in situations where its ambush failed and it had to fight back. It could burn through its mana in one or two spells and get a head start on its opponent before moving in to finish it off with melee attacks. It would certainly be more useful than projectile mastery. Projectile mastery. A measure of your ability to handle hand-thrown weapons. Requirements? None. Type? Passive. Range? Self. Effects. Increases damage dealt with hand-thrown weapons by 10% per level of this skill. This was pretty much identical to other mastery skills. It would seem that, in addition to the straight-up power boost, these mastery skills also raised the mimic's understanding of a specific weapon or school of magic. How to grip them, how to slash with them, or, in the case of magic, how to properly chant and focus when casting spells. It would be more accurate to say that this imparted knowledge was the true reason behind the increase in offensive power. As for this particular skill, the mimic had gotten it after playing around with the spears it had looted off those guards back in the cave. It was convinced they could be a powerful ranged attack, so it ended up practicing with them. It even managed to improve its dreadful aim every time the mastery skill went up in level. Then it realized that it could just use magic if it wanted to attack at range and completely abandoned the endeavor. Even if it could gain some attributes from it, it would much rather focus on its mimicry and warlockery. Using throwing weapons and chanting magic at the same time was also quite impossible. Trying to do so would result in the mimic biting its own tentacles off by accident, not to mention it lacked the concentration to properly aim both of them at the same time. So it gave up on projectile mastery. What would be the point in training up a skill that had little to no practical use? This monster had stumbled onto the simple truth that, as tasty as attribute gains were, attaining a few high-level skills and jobs was ultimately better than having a lot of low-leveled ones. Even if an adventurer had multiple combat-related jobs like, for example, a ranger, a rogue, a warrior, and a priest at the same time, they could never actually use those all at once. How could one simultaneously block with a shield and shoot a bow, or sneak around and ambush things while they were busy chanting healing spells? It was simply impossible, like trying to turn one's head left and right simultaneously. Not to mention that the attributes were mostly exclusive. A warrior's attribute gains that focused on strength and endurance would be pretty useless for a ranger which needed agility, perception, and dexterity. And while both of those had some overlap with the rogue job, that was an occupation that relied on completely different skills. Oh, sure, ultimately it was possible to master all those jobs at once, but people did not have that sort of lifespan available. In a world where quality was significantly more important than quantity, it was vital to focus one's training and become a specialist. Jack-of-all-adventurers were, quite simply put, useless past level 50. A deep pond was many times more dangerous than a knee-deep ocean, after all. Even the mimic was vaguely aware of that fact. Although its familiar was created with a level that was below 20, her magic already seemed close in potency to that of the mimic with a level of 38. The only reason it was able to bring out this much power in the first place was because its main job and two of its skills, cadaver absorption and biomass, provided a boost to all attributes, which included intelligence. Much like how strength would improve all melee attacks, intelligence would improve the effectiveness of all spells. Right now, the mimic had intelligence that was more or less standard for a level 20-ish warlock with proper magic-related skills. It would continue to use cadaver absorption as much as possible, though. Doing that could still give the mimic free attributes, skills, and job levels without having to spend time on actually training them. And so, after considering what it would do in the future, it decided to focus on improving its current jobs and skills rather than seek out new ones. Speaking of which, it had reached level 25 in its mimic job during that last fight. It opened its status screen and was greeted with two unknowns. One was the max next to the mimic job. The other was the plus sign next to its species of mimic, lesser. And the plus sign next to its job was not there. Did the status screen not show up properly and misplaced the ever-important plus sign? The mimic opened and closed its status several times, but it always came up the same. It was again stumped. Trying to inspect the plus sign did nothing, and inspecting its species opened up a screen that was equally useless since it contained trivia the monster already knew. Mimic. Species. A low-class shape-shifting monster that exists only in dungeons. Mimics hunt by ambushing careless adventurers. They can be born in the form of treasure chests, walls, floors, doors, or furniture. Even though they can change their appearance at will, they cannot change the shape they were born with. The species is divided into two variants, lesser and greater. The main difference between them is that greater mimics are far more cunning and resilient than their lesser kin. So, desperately running out of options, it decided to ask for help. At least now, it had someone it could actually ask for help. Zira was making her way through the forest when she felt a slight tugging sensation on the back of her head. It meant that her summoner wished to communicate with her.
"What is it, Master?"
she inquired through the thought link. The chest wanted to know what the thingy on the other thing was for. Also, how come the thingy was on that thingy instead of the other thingy? And, perchance, was that thingy delicious? The succubus let out a sigh. Conversations with that moron always ended up being more or less like that.
"Master, I have no idea what you're trying to say."
There was a short pause. Then her master's status splashed into her consciousness like a boulder into a puddle. She let out a reflexive,
"What the fuck?"
at the sudden influx of information. It caught her completely off guard, causing her to blank out for a few seconds. She then tripped on an exposed root and fell flat on her face, smashing her forehead against a rock in the process. Even at a distance, that monster still managed to make her suffer. She wondered if her master was perhaps one of those idiot savants, only instead of maths or painting, it was unnaturally proficient in the art of tormenting others. That same master impatiently asked her again about the thingy. She got up and rubbed her forehead, wiping a trickle of blood away in the process. After turning her attention to the mimic status, she immediately realized what it was trying to say.
"Master, try chanting rank up," she sent back.
"Rank. Tasty?"
came the fragmented reply.
"Just do it."
"Orders. Me. Snack. You."
The mimic kindly reminded the uppity familiar of her position. Sighed Zira. She had briefly forgotten two important things in the heat of the moment. The first thing was that her master regarded everything good or beneficial as tasty. And the second was that, when presented with a stupid question, she had to give an equally stupid answer.
"Sorry, Master. Yes, rank is tasty."
Overjoyed at this revelation, the mimic immediately chanted,
"Rank up!"
Rank up. Mimic. Lesser. Requirements? Level 25 mimic job. Level 5 shapeshift. Endurance 75. Effects? Species will become mimic, greater. Level cap on mimic job will be increased to 50. Shapeshift skill proficiency will increase. The requirements have been met. Do you wish to rank up? Yes or no? The master agreed with its familiar. This did, in fact, look delicious. And so, it eagerly chose yes, then blacked out. Part 7. Rank up complete. Congratulations, your species has become Mimic, greater. The maximum level of your Mimic job has been increased to 50. Proficiency level increased. Shapeshift is now level 6. Agility plus 1, Dexterity plus 1, Endurance plus 2. The Mimic's consciousness woke up to a brand new window waiting for it. The evolution from a lesser to a greater Mimic was over with. It didn't feel any different, though. You are Ravenous. Automatic HP and MP recovery are now disabled. You are starving. You will lose 2% of your maximum HP every 60 minutes. Well, apart from the hunger, it was suddenly overcome by an overwhelming desire to eat and consume in order to survive, an overpowering need to fill its belly if it wanted to live. There was a void inside it, a vacuum so strong that it threatened to make it implode on itself. Something screamed at it to abandon all pretense and stuff its belly. However, it would not succumb to its base instincts so easily. Not anymore. And then it reactivated its short-range magical perception. The first thing it saw was itself. The monster had reverted back to its dormant state. The spider legs, tongue, and eyes had all retreated back inside its body, leaving it in its default chest-like appearance. It looked exactly the same as it did before. This was probably some defensive mechanism its body enacted on its own. Having confirmed its body seemed to be intact, it turned its attention to its surroundings. It was no longer in a forest, but in some new place it didn't recognize. It was sitting on a floor made out of wood. Actual wooden boards, unlike the fake ones it used for its disguise. All around it were scattered wooden crates and boxes of variable size and make. Some looked newer while others were practically rotting. The walls of this place were weird, especially the ones on its left and right. They were slanted at about 45 degrees and leaning against each other. Did the wooden surfaces want to be a ceiling? At least the ones directly behind and further in front of it were normal-looking, but their neighbors had forced them into a triangular shape. It was obvious which pair of walls were boss in this room. And yes, this was indeed a room. Although the Mimic didn't know it, the tight space was actually an attic. It was only about 3 meters at its tallest point, 6 meters left to right, and about 10 meters front to back. The awkward placement of the slanted roof meant that, realistically speaking, you'd have to crawl if you wanted to reach into the sides. Cobwebs and dust covered the place and the Mimic itself, suggesting it had been there a while. But how did it get here? And where exactly was here? Those were both good questions. If only it had someone it could ask. Oh wait, it did. It felt the link between itself and its familiar was still active, meaning the succubus would probably know what was going on. It sent a telepathic message to get her attention.
Snack!
Names? Were those tasty? It didn't know, but snacks were tasty. Therefore, the familiar's name would now be Snack.
Who the hell is Snack?
Came the irritated response.
Master, you're awake.
No. Hungry. Bring food.
Understood, Master. I will be there in 15 minutes.
It seems this familiar had an idea of what was going on. It was time to ask it for the details.
Where? How? Why?
It inquired. Zira then began explaining her side of the story. She had gone into the city and collected 650 GP for her contributions to the sweeper subjugation quest. Since her master had been unconscious, she was left without orders. That situation was something she fully expected to happen, which was why she wanted her master to rank up and allow her to play around for a while. It's not something she had experienced personally, but learned about it from one of her previous masters. But before she could start playing around, she realized she had left her master unconscious at the site of its supposed death. If someone were to discover it, then her cover would be blown, and it was questionable whether she would be able to run away in time. So naturally, she went back to that place and, under the cover of night, dragged it over to one of the nearby farms. She used her natural charms to convince the elderly couple who ran the place to let her stay for a while and store her luggage in their attic. The mimic found that last bit to be particularly interesting.
Farmers? You mean humans?
Yes, two of them. Oh, you should probably avoid killing them since
too late.
In the middle of Zira's explanation, an old, balding farmer went into the attic to fetch something. He walked in through the trap door in the floor and was summarily eaten. His wife, having heard the horrible gnashing and thrashing that came from upstairs, went to investigate. The last thing she saw was her husband's blood splattered all over the place before her head was chopped off from behind. Needless to say, she was also eaten. Your hunger has been sated. Automatic HP and MP recovery will return to normal. You are no longer starving. Your HP will no longer deteriorate.
Was tasty. Chewy, but oddly satisfying.
Even if they were old and barely had any meat on them, their intestines, livers, and hearts proved to be as filling as expected. The succubus sighed to herself. Again, she forgot exactly who she was dealing with. Now they would have to burn down the farm to cover their tracks and run away before anyone came asking too many questions.
How long was I out?
Came the next question.
3 days, Master. Huh? Master? Are you okay?
Yes.
Maybe just my imagination, she thought.
If only 3 days, continued the mimic, then how come so much hunger?
That's part of the rank-up process, I guess,
she offered.
But more importantly than that, Master, you can form proper thoughts now.
It wasn't her imagination, but reality. What she received through the link weren't some fragmented words, but properly constructed sentences that had actual will and direction behind them. Also, it didn't once say thingy and mentioned tasty things only 3 times in that conversation.
I can have thoughts?
Yeah, like just now.
It seemed that rank up fundamentally upgraded the mimic's sad excuse for a mind. It was now capable of holding a conversation without being constantly distracted. There was even a chance of it making informed opinions based on more than its immediate desires.
Are thoughts tasty?
Yes, Master. Thoughts are tasty.
She gave up. For the briefest moment, she had the vague hope her master would stop being such a colossal moron. In the end, even if its mental abilities were expanded, it was still a 3-month-old monster that was barely even sentient. It didn't really have any desires beyond the instinctive need to eat and grow, so Zira had only herself to blame for pointlessly getting her hopes up.
I beg of you,
she added.
Please stay still and don't move.
The mimic had no reason to refuse. If staying still without moving was an Olympic sport, it would have a serious shot at the gold medal. So it returned to its spot in the attic and sat down. It still had unfinished business with its status.
Rank up!
It chanted, and a familiar-looking window appeared. Rank up. Mimic. Greater. Requirements, level 50 mimic job, level 10 shapeshift, endurance 200. Possible evolutions and their effects will be revealed once the minimum requirements are met. Meeting certain conditions will unlock additional options. The mimic's curiosity skyrocketed. Rather than become a higher variant of the same species, it seemed like it could evolve into something completely different. And it appeared as if what it did during its journey to that point would somehow increase its options. However, it could not simply learn these unlock conditions from its status. While these menus and screens were useful, ultimately they did not contain much information beyond what the monster already knew. Well, no point worrying about things it had no control over. Achieving the bare minimum requirements would be pretty straightforward, and it seemed like it would get them eventually. Truthfully, it was looking forward to the level 10 shapeshift more than anything else. Shapeshift. A measure of your ability to mold and sculpt your own flesh. Requirements? Born as a shape-shifting species. Type, passive. Range, self. Effects. Affords the ability to alter physical appearance at will. The extent of transformation is limited based on species. Increases shape-shifting speed and precision by 10% per level of this skill. increases how much of the body can be shapeshifted with each level of the skill. Similar to mastery skills, this one had the hidden effect of increasing the mimic's general anatomical knowledge. Things like how to construct stronger muscles and tougher hides. When eating something, it could gain deeper insights into how it was put together. Doing so also meant it could mimic those body parts more effectively and even pick out weak points such as tendons, hearts, eyes, and throats with its swordplay. At this point, it could probably take apart and then put together a human with its eyes closed. Not that it had eyes in the first place, though.
"Master!"
shouted Zira. She had just poked her disguised head into the attic. Then she recoiled when she saw the state of the place.
"Ugh! What in the hell? Why is there blood everywhere?"
This was the first time she had actually seen the aftermath of the mimic's feeding frenzy. The walls, the floor, the ceiling, and pretty much all the crates and boxes were stained with fresh, crimson blood.
"Forget that," said the mimic through the thought link. "Where is food?"
"Ah, right. Here you go, master."
She raised her hand. It was holding a string, and tied around the string by their feet were five whole chickens with freshly broken necks. Well, it wasn't like the farmers would need them anymore. Zira set them down on the floor in front of her master. The animate chest opened its mouth and greedily scooped up the still warm bodies with its flexible tongues and devoured them in a flash. It chewed on them for a few seconds before swallowing.
"Not bad. Tastes like people."
Zira just barely managed to stop herself from retorting with, "Isn't that backwards?"
"Snack! The thingy that can be traded for tasty things! Show me!"
The succubus rolled her eyes. They were back at thingy again. Still, at least it was pretty clear what it meant this time. She unhooked a small leather satchel from her waist and emptied its contents on a dry spot of the floor. A number of glistening gold coins clanked onto the wooden planks. Each coin was a little under 5 centimeters in diameter and about 3 millimeters thick. One side had a shield-shaped crest decorated with flowers. The other bore the image of a bearded human with a fancy hat. These gold pieces were the first ones it had ever seen.
"Here they are, master. 13 king pieces worth 50 GP each, for a total 650 GP.
But her words did not reach the mimic. Its entire attention had been captured by those coins. The only light source in this dark attic was what was pouring through the trap door Zira was still in. Yet they seemed to shine and glisten with a beauty like it had never seen before. This was a fascination well beyond liking shiny things. It was as if the gold itself was speaking to the mimic. "Hold me," it whispered. "Protect me," it said. "Never let me go," it demanded. And the simple monster would comply. How could it ever resist such sweet temptation? The faux chest's imitation lid opened itself wide, and amidst the rows of pointy, jagged teeth appeared something new. Something different. Rather than a red tongue covered in clear drool, what appeared was the upper body of a woman. She had waist-long, straight hair that was the color of brilliant snow. Her skin was so pale that anyone who saw it would doubt if it was ever touched by the sun. The eyes were a deep crimson that seemed to stare into one's very soul. Her breasts, almost as big as her head, jiggled pleasantly with every slight movement. A proud pink nipple stood on each one, combined with the unnaturally thin waist and flared hips that gave way to the rest of the mimic. It gave her an astonishing hourglass figure. The girl in the box wasted no time and stretched out both her arms. They extended unnaturally, like rubber, covering the meter and a half distance between the monster and the coins in an instant. Her tender fingers then slowly, almost reverently, scooped up the gold pieces and brought them back to the main body carefully. The human-looking part of the monster then leaned back against its upper jaw, which instinctively retracted its teeth. It assumed a pose that looked like someone relaxing in a lounge chair. It then placed the gold coins in the valley of its cleavage. Its hands and arms wrapped around those formidable breasts, pushing them together and creating a sort of fleshy cradle for the mimic's new prize. A dumb smile drifted naturally onto those full, pink lips, and the monster stood perfectly still, reveling in the sensation against its marshmallow-like breasts. The cold, heavy, Shiny metal felt incredibly pleasant, after all.
Master?
Called out Zira, but that master was currently preoccupied.
This is it, thought the mimic. This is right.
A treasure chest that finally had actual treasure. Those completely normal and entirely unmagical coins fulfilled a craving the monster never knew it had. Right now, at this moment, it was satisfied. It felt content for what was probably the first time in its short life. People were tasty. Levels, skills, and attributes were also tasty. But gold was different. It had no actual flavor, yet the mimic thought that it was absolutely delicious.
Master!
Yelled Zira. This time she seemed to get the mimic's attention. The hazy stare and dumb smile on that beautiful face disappeared. It stared at the demoness with a disgusted expression like she had just taken a massive dump in its porridge.
What is it, Snack?
It sent through the thought link.
I'm busy.
Why am I sticking out of Master's jaws?
That was the reason Zira was staring. The human body currently poking out of the fleshy insides of that chest looked almost identical to her. The colors were wrong. It had no wings or horns, but everything else was exactly in the shape and proportions of the succubus's true form. She also had the disturbing thought that if the woman-shaped part of the mimic had gone on just a few centimeters lower, it would certainly also mirror her lower lips.
Snack is tasty. I needed tasty parts to enjoy delicious gold,
it replied simply. The merciless mimic had eaten Zira so many times that it had absolute knowledge of her body. It was, simply put, the body it knew best. Humans all had small differences between them. The proportions, skin, hair, teeth, jaw, face. Every individual was unique in various ways. So having tasted the exact same succubus-shaped fruit over 30 times made it so it naturally became the form it was most familiar with. It didn't particularly care about pigmentation, horns, or wings, which was why it came out looking like an albino half-succubus. The important thing was it could properly enjoy the weight and feel of the gold coins by borrowing Zira's sensitive boobs. In truth, this new development had very little to do with its evolution into a greater mimic. The monster was perfectly capable of achieving this shape when it raised shapeshift to level 5. After all, even if it couldn't abandon its outward chest-like appearance, the insides were a completely different story. It simply had no urge to do something like this until now. This form was ill-suited to combat, and the higher center of gravity meant it would have trouble balancing on top of its favorite spider legs. The sole purpose to the pseudo-Zira was, quite simply, to have fun with it. Zira was dumbstruck yet again. As a shapeshifter herself, she more or less understood all of that. However, the realization that the mimic had created a cheap copy of her just to enjoy itself made her feel oddly violated. It was almost worse than being eaten alive. Almost, but not quite. After about 3.5 hours of the mimic playing with Zira's hard-earned money on top of Zira's borrowed breasts, it finally seemed to have enough. It stowed the gold inside its storage and called out to the succubus who was sulking in the corner.
We go now!
The demoness turned her head around. She was sitting while hugging her knees and facing away from her master. She had been trying really, really hard not to mind the situation behind her. It almost worked, too. Until that creature started letting out cooing noises using her own voice. So she minded it immensely. At least it was back to how it was before, a simple chest with 8 black imitation spider legs jutting out from under it. It was much easier to look at than that twisted imitation of her own true self.
Understood, Master,
she replied while standing up.
Where to?
Back to dungeon. Something I have to do.
Interlude. A cheap drink. Lelandros never wanted much out of life. Just to become really famous and get all the ladies. A simple, straightforward dream. But that was then, and this was now. Thoughts of fame and fortune were so far removed from his consciousness that he questioned if he really had them in the first place. Right now, The only thing on his mind was whether he would be able to afford to pay his bar tab. That was all he wanted to think about. That and the thing right in front of him. A glass of rotgut. This vile, brown, murky concoction was an alcoholic drink so strong it could knock out even a dwarf in about 4 shots. It was also incredibly cheap, which was convenient for the poverty-riddled elf. The downside was that it tasted horrible. That much was to be expected, considering it used goblin ears as an ingredient. The flavor was so bad that no sane person would try it more than once. Just the rank smell was more than enough to discourage a lot of people. However, Lelandros knew the flavor of Rayla's brain matter. In the past, he had jokingly said he'd love to have a taste of that buxom elven druid. But he didn't mean it literally. Compared to that, this mixture was as delicious as honeyed mead. He mentally cursed himself for remembering that taste, and plunged deeper into depression and revulsion. If only there was something around to help him forget. Oh wait, there was. He screwed up his courage and determination, then downed his drink in one go. The pungent taste and high alcoholic content hit him almost immediately. It felt like a horse had kicked the side of his head. You are intoxicated. The effects of the agility, dexterity, and wisdom attributes have been reduced by 50%. He slammed the glass back on the counter with enough force to crack a less sturdy receptacle and panted heavily, but one drink wasn't enough. The unwanted thoughts were still in his head. In his mind, he knew he made the right call. His common sense told him he had no chance against that monster. It had magic powerful enough to kill a person in one hit. There was no way he could have matched up to such a creature. He felt that even if the four of them were completely rested and fully prepared, they could never have hoped to take it down. And having heard how the subjugation quest he set in motion concluded, he was definitely right. His mind knew that, but his heart refused to accept it. Dark thoughts welled up from within every time he had a moment to himself. Which, incidentally, was pretty much all the time.
I abandoned them. Why was I the only one spared? I should have died with them. Oh, crap, he mumbled.
His mind had drifted off in that particular direction again. The elf seriously doubted he would be able to sleep at night if he wasn't blackout drunk. Even if he managed to calm himself enough to doze off, he would always be beset by nightmares and wake up a few hours later in a cold sweat. And so, even if it tasted like ass, even if it was slowly poisoning him, even if it made his breath horrible enough to peel paint off the walls, he would still drink his medicine. But first, he had to get a refill. He lazily raised his arm towards the barkeep. The rough-looking gentleman with the bald head and black goatee went over to his customer.
Let me guess, said the barkeep. Another shot of rot gut?
Lelandro simply nodded in return with a,
yes.
He was the spitting image of a habitual alcoholic who had given up on life. The barkeep didn't judge or belittle the elf for that, though. He knew better. These people would latch onto him the instant he treated them as anything other than a source of revenue. They'd one-sidedly pour out their sob stories and either take up his valuable time or get rowdy when he tried to ignore them. The best solution to those awkward situations was to avoid creating them entirely. The man had long ago run out of fucks to give, so he kept relations between himself and his customers strictly professional.
Sorry, Twiggy, he said, but that lady over there bought the last bottle.
He pointed to the woman sitting in the corner. She was wearing a blue robe and had long, straight blonde hair tumbling down her back. Her sizable breasts were visible from behind, poking out slightly from either side of her narrow back.
If you want some more, you're gonna have to take it up with her.
No more. More battles? Bottles?
Asked Lelandros. He was already struggling to form sentences after just one shot.
Nope. That was the last of it.
Although rotgut was technically a drink, it was only ever ordered either as a prank, as a form of punishment, or, in some cases, out of morbid curiosity. But even then, it was only ordered once. People who actually ordered a second or third shot were extremely rare. With so little demand, The barkeep only kept one or two bottles in stock at any given time. So, given the choice between a pretty lady who paid up front and a filthy twig with a tab, it was obvious which one was the more valued customer.
Fuck,
let out Lelandros. He got up from his stool and ambled in her general direction. The elf had one goal in coming to this establishment: to black out for the night. Even if she didn't want to share the drink, he'd still find a way to accomplish his mission. There were more ways than one to lose consciousness, after all.
Hey now, the barkeep called out to him. Don't get violent with her. All right? I'll have you thrown out of here with both legs broken if you try something funny.
Lelandros turned around unsteadily and mockingly saluted him.
Aye, aye, Cap'n.
The barkeep just sighed to himself with a mumble of bloody twigs before signaling the security he'd hired to keep an eye on the elf. The over 2-meter-tall goon leaning against one of the walls nodded in response that he understood his job was to keep the elf from causing any damage to the owner's establishment.
Excuse me,
said the suspect in question to the woman in blue.
Could I bother you for a drink of that?
The black-haired beauty turned her head. Her blue eyes locked with his hazel-colored ones. They then followed his outstretched arm that was pointing at the drink on her table.
Huh. Why not?
She said with a sigh.
Have a seat, stranger.
Oh. Thanks kindly, ma'am.
Don't mention it,
she said with a bit of a bitter smile. It was the sort of face that clearly said she had far bigger problems to worry about than some random elf crashing her one-woman drinking spree. She poured some of the rot gut into the glass in front of her and passed it to Lelandros.
Here you go.
Thanks,
he replied, while staring intently at the drink. Downing this thing was no easy task. He had to swallow it fast so his tongue and nose would not have a chance to react. Such a feat took a certain amount of mental fortitude and bravery. So when the elf lifted his gaze and saw the girl chugging directly from the bottle in big gulps, his body reacted before his drink-addled mind could, and he threw up on the floor. The goon saw that and, after silently confirming with the bartender, went to work. Less than a minute later, Lelandros was thrown out into a dusty alley through a side entrance. He fell on the ground hard, like a sack of day-old laundry. The bouncer yelled something about a final warning at the poor sod before walking back inside the bar. Lelandros just chuckled to himself. Tonight was a failure, it seemed. This was the only place he knew of that both served rot gut and would allow him to keep a tab. He really had nowhere to go, so he just lay there on the cobblestone alleyway. He decided he might as well try to sleep right here. It was already way past sunset, so there was nobody around to disturb him anyway. Or so he thought. Less than a minute later, he heard footsteps and felt someone looming over him.
Where do you live?
Asked the gentle female voice. His eyes fluttered open and barely made out her face in the darkness. It was that pretty girl who so kindly offered him some of her drink. She bent down and extended an arm towards him, which caused her breasts to sway in a pendulum-like motion.
Come on,
she beckoned as he tore his eyes away from her hypnotic cleavage.
I'll get you home.
Thank you,
he said weakly. He really did not expect her to actually care, but he wasn't stupid enough to turn down help when it was offered. In reality, this was the first time since that day someone had ever treated him as anything other than a burden. He gripped her tender hand with no hesitation. After helping the poor man to his feet, she lent him her shoulder. The two of them then trotted off into the night. Whether it was the drink, the oddly romantic moonlit atmosphere, or, most probably, the soft breasts pressing against his side, Lelandros felt he rather fancied this girl. He made a small pass at her, commenting on how beautiful she was. The girl simply smiled demurely and blushed slightly, saying he was rather handsome himself. One thing led to another, and by the time they reached Lelandros's hovel, they were already passionately kissing. They barely made it past the front door before their clothes started slipping off their bodies almost by themselves. Not even their undergarments remained by the time they made it to the bed. The elf was pushed down on the bed by the woman whose name he didn't even know. She slowly climbed over him, letting her bare nipples drag along his skin. Intoxicated by the erotic situation, the poor virgin could do little else but hope he wouldn't bust a nut immediately. It was a very real concern, as the nude body before him felt like it existed for the sole purpose of rousing men's lust. Not that he was complaining. She straddled his waist and ground her moist lower lips along his already stiff member. She let out a few moans that were positively dripping with passion. After making sure both of them were as aroused as possible, she reached down and grabbed it. The elf watched in awe as she raised her hips and guided his manhood towards her special place. She bit her lip and slammed her hips downwards, taking the entire length inside her all at once, popping the proverbial cherry of the young elf. But, alas, the young man could not resist the onslaught of pleasure and came immediately. He grabbed her flared thighs and thrust his hips upwards without thinking. He committed spurt after spurt of semen to her innermost depths while his partner simply hummed delightedly. About 15 minutes later, his orgasm finally ended. The woman let out a small, satisfied sigh. It was her first real meal since she was contracted to that moronic box. She dismounted her partner and got off the bed. Despite accepting copious amounts of bodily fluids, not a single drop ran down her thigh. Zira snapped her fingers. The discarded blue robes on the ground leaped up in the air and flew at her as if being pulled in by an invisible wire. They splashed against her naked body like goop and began shifting and transforming into their previous appearance. Having completely clothed herself in seconds, the succubus retrieved the bottle of rot gut she brought with her and poured the last of its contents down her gullet.
Oh, man. They really dilute this stuff nowadays.
She complained to nobody in particular after finishing it off.
This swill isn't enough to even give me a buzz. Sometimes I really hate this body's constitution.
Since her flesh was a magical construct, it did not need food or water. Even her feeding just now was nothing more than scratching an itch. Technically, it had the effect of restoring HP and MP, but since she was already full on both accounts, the whole affair amounted to little more than a midnight snack. It wasn't quite as satisfying as she'd hoped, though. She preferred the taste of big, burly men rather than these scrawny virgins. But beggars couldn't be choosers. Right now, her master was sleeping due to its rank-up, but she had no idea how long her short vacation would actually last. Under these circumstances, was it really any wonder she eagerly gobbled up the first suitable victim she found? That elven lad had no resistance to her demonic seduction whatsoever, and nobody of note would really give a shit if he died. He was not ideal, but good enough.
Damn. I really need something stronger. I wonder if I can find some firebrand whiskey around this place.
She tossed the now empty bottle of rotgut away and made her way out of the filthy hovel to seek her next victim. As for Lelandros, all that was left of him was an emaciated corpse. A body that was little more than skin and bones with a wide, creepy smile on its hollowed-out face. Chapter 4 Urges Part 1 The red zone of the Lidigar dungeon complex was undoubtedly the most inhospitable place around the city of Monotol, as expected of the most dangerous part of the only dungeon in the area. Still, not many adventurers past their first 2 or 3 months on the job would find this place particularly dangerous. It was certainly not that bad when compared to the majority of other dungeons strewn throughout the world. Unlike the cave-like systems of the green and yellow zones, the red part looked more like a crypt or mausoleum. Stone brick floors, walls, and a dark ceiling that seemed to go upward forever. Stone gargoyles could be seen lined up at random along the walls, and creepy carvings could appear and disappear from the floor and walls, seemingly at random. Pale blue torches bathed the corridors in an eerie light, just enough to keep one's eyes from adapting to otherwise profound darkness. The air was heavy with the stench of death and carried a faint strawberry-like flavor. The latter would be a side effect of the slightly thicker concentration of mana. The former was caused by the denizens of this place. Hovering around level 15, they were all undead beings that made this place particularly troublesome. To begin with, most undead would not get tired and did not feel pain. Those they encountered would be met with relentless pursuit and an unyielding hatred. The simplest enemy to fight in these halls were skeletons. Just a glance would reveal what variety of skeleton it was. Would it be the skeleton soldiers carrying rusted weapons and armor? Or perhaps skeleton archers that never seemed to run out of arrows for their short bows? And most